Welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Arizona Boomer Radio gives voice to 1.4 million boomers throughout the Grand Canyon State and beyond. Each show has a different guest and a different topic. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now here are the hosts of the show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And indeed, welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. The Babe's not here today, but then again, when was the last time the Babe was here? I don't remember. She's always out working with our other clients, doing things for them with regard to her publishing of e-books and mini-books, and also doing a little consulting along the way. So I'm sorry she's not here, but I'm glad she's not here at the same time, if that's possible, because her not being here is bringing in more money to the coffers of Boomer and the Babe, Inc., and that's a good thing. And I'm Pete Peters, and we invite the listeners to go to boomerandthebabe.com, see everything that we are involved in, including our e-book and mini-book projects and our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. You can go there by boomerandthebabe.com. And the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is really a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company when you get right down to it, because we do a lot of different things with various forms of media. We're glad to have our guests with us today. They are Lori and Joseph Battaglia. Lori and Joseph Battaglia are the owners of Living the Dream Coaches, and they specialize in reigniting careers, relationships, and lives. Lori specializes in type A women who become stuck in their lives and question, where do I go take my career, what will my legacy be, and how will I live the life that I dreamed of? Joseph has a passion to work with committed couples, preferably boomers, who have lost the spark of intimacy that was there on their honeymoon. They prefer to work together so that their clients get two coaches and a more complete point of view, male and female, as they say, the thinker and the feeler. We're going to find out which is which. We also bring everything to the table, coaching, consulting, and training. Welcome to the Arizona Boomer Radio Show, Lori and Joseph Battaglia.
Hi, thank you, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. I think everything that you're involved in is certainly very timely, because of the way things are nowadays and everything many people are going through. So it's very appropriate that you be here. But we want to find out a little bit about what you were doing prior to becoming the Living the Dream Coaches, LLC. So whoever would like to go first, give me about 2 minutes of your background prior to your coaching, and then the next one, and we'll, from that point, jump into our conversation.
Okay, sounds good. This is Lori. So I am a career banker and investment company person. So I've had a long and illustrious, just about 35 years in corporate life and financial services. And I did a lot along the way. I started out as a bank teller and worked my way up through the system and went into sales and marketing. And people kept saying, you ought to be in human resources. So eventually I did do that. And found that wasn't really my game. My game is more around training and development and helping organizations and people kind of get their act together. I love leadership development, team building, and all those kinds of things. So that's my thing. And as I got into coaching, I found myself a lot of times in the workplace mentoring people. People would come for career advice, and I love helping people get through the systems and figure things out. So I did an awful lot of career coaching and counseling over the years, and it was more from the mentoring point of view. I was giving my opinions, and I found that sometimes people take you up on that and sometimes they don't. So I decided along the way to certify as a coach, and we'll tell you our story a little later where I took Joe along for free, and he decided to do it. And so I did certify up as a coach. We started our business about a year ago, and we've been working with clients even before that and in our business, and finding out that people are really looking for someone to watch by them and to support them as they walk a different path. for me, it tends to be more type A women, but I also work with men, especially in leadership roles. And often they come to coaches kind of perplexed about why they're not getting anywhere with something that they want to do, or a feeling of frustration about making a change and not quite knowing how to get there. They're used to setting goals and guidelines and to-do lists and all that, and that's not cutting it, and they're not quite sure why. So that's how I got into coaching, and that's the kind of people that are coming to see us these days. So, Joe, tell us about you.
Okay, so this is Joe. My history is, my goodness, so varied. As a budding machinist in the early days, 4 years in the Navy as an aviation electronics technologist, finally I settled on healthcare, and I spent training as an X-ray tech, and then finally as a nuclear medicine technologist. I'll bet you a lot of our listeners know what a stress test is, or a bone scan. I did that for 35 years in many different ways, shapes, and forms. But the point is that, here's that big secret. Yes, I'm the feeler. I'm the caregiver here. So I realized when Laurie got into coaching that really to be a good healthcare worker, one way or the other, you really are coaching in a way. So it was a shoe-in for me to move from healthcare and patient care into being a coach. It's the love of my life. It's really what I've been doing all along. So that's where I came from.
Well, I'm interested when I read the little thing about Laurie, it says you specialize in people wondering, where do I go with my career now? What will my legacy say about me? And how can I have the life I've only dreamed of? I find those things, three things, very interesting. First of all, everybody, and I'm overstating by saying everybody, many, many people are concerned now more than ever about their legacy. Define legacy as you used it in your statement.
I think for me, legacy is about the way you show up in life and the things you leave behind. So for me, it's been a conscious decision for quite a while now. Somebody got me into work and spirit conversations back in Pennsylvania. We moved to Arizona about 2.5, almost 3 years ago. And someone engaged me in this, can you bring your whole self to work concept? And so I've been fleshing that around ever since. And I do take my whole self to work. So for me, legacy is about the people I touch every day. And no matter where I am, I hope that I'm spreading positive energy, that I'm not putting bad stuff out there. I don't want to be that person in the store that does bad things to the clerk that serves so that they then treat the next person badly or the next person badly. I want to be the one that comes along after that person and says, you're doing a good job, hang in there. That kind of gets them back on their feet. And I think as people, you know, especially boomers now, we're in our 50s and 60s, and we think about that. Joe and I have grandchildren that are 9 and almost 7, and grown kids on both sides. We're a second marriage. And we really think about what we're leaving behind and how we want to be remembered. So I think it's that impression that you leave when you just interact with people day to day.
Well, we have had several people on the show that are concerned with their principal purpose is legacy work, helping people find their legacy. Some of them have published books. Some of them have put together a workbook so they can fill in the blanks and leave that information to their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and so on. Others are involved with recording the legacy on video so that the offspring and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and have that to find out what grandpa and great-grandpa was or great-grandpa was like. Maybe they never even knew him, but it's sort of like this is where I came from kind of a thing. And that's one way of looking at legacy, I think. But the legacy that I'm most concerned with is it's almost like a form of branding. Branding your business or self-branding, that is going to be not what you've put on film, not what you've put in a workbook to fill in the blanks. It's what are they going to say about me when I'm gone?
Yeah.
And I think that's much more important. I would like my granddaughter. I've got two granddaughters also, and I would like them to say, "Well, I remember Grandpa, and this is what we did, and this is the way he was, and you know, whatever the case might be." And I would much prefer that. I mean, if they have a video of me saying something profound like, "Brush your teeth and and obey your parents and do good in school," that's one thing.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. You're right. It's almost like a grassroots thing. I mean, you know, to leave a recorded thing or a book or whatever. I mean, really, whose ego is getting stroked here? You know, that's more for the person that's for, you know, like it would be my ego that gets stroked when I do that. But really, when you get right down to it, you're right. How is that grandchild or that son who's going to tell his grandson or his son who is grandpa? Who was he really? Was he a kind, gentle person, or was he a strict person? But I mean, there lies the legacy. It's the grassroots feeling. It's the more than the published book that you leave, or the physical evidence. It's more the feelings, the grassroots feelings that go from there. At least that's my.
As an example, my father's legacy is what people think of him is fine, and I know what people think of him. I mean, he was a hard working son of a gun. He was a taskmaster, but he was very fair.
Yes.
But his legacy as it pertains to me is what I write down when I'm describing my father on the paper, and what I say about my father becomes his legacy. And that's the important thing. What my daughter will say about me becomes my legacy. If she says he was a real SOB, he was a mean, nasty son of a gun, that's my legacy, and I can't change it. So you've got to affect it while you have the opportunity.
Right. Yeah. I think it boils down to who writes your legacy.
Yeah.
Do you write your legacy, or does your son and your descendants write your legacy? And really, when you get right down to it, and here's where my passion comes in. It's you discovering really who you are. You know, a lot of people really don't know in an intimate way who they really are. What they convey is what society wants them to be, not who they really are. You know, I think if you dug way down deep to your father, would you find your father to be that hard taskmaster, or would he be a really nice guy, you know, when you got to really know him, who he was? I don't know. You tell me.
Mm-hmm. He's both. I mean, he is absolutely both. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He had high expectations of himself and of his children. There are times when we met his expectations and times when we didn't. And you know, we were the ones that had to deal with that. You know, but I read it the other day again because I'm putting a blog out to a golf operation that I've become involved with lately for the radio show, and the blog was about my father and about my father teaching me to play golf, and the fact was that as I grew older in age and stature, the golf game, although it was always friendly and always it was not serious, but yet it was a lesson being learned along the way. The case would be that I'd have an 18-inch putt to win the hole, and rather than say pick it up, you'd say you probably better putt that because you just may miss it, and I'll still win the hole.
Yeah.
And I'd look at him, I'd roll my eyes, and I'd miss the putt.
It's all a mind game.
Pardon me?
It's all a mind game. Golf.
Yeah, well, it is. But I mean, but the point is, when it was all said and done, what was the best thing about that whole thing? We were playing golf together.
Yeah.
And that was part of his legacy that he left me, the times that we spent together. The time that back in Michigan when we lived in Michigan, I was charged with painting the gutters on the house, the rain gutters. And I spilled the paint and it went all down the front of the house and into the bushes below. And my dad said, "Damn it, clean that up and let's go play golf." And I never had to paint another gutter again the rest of my life. And to this day, I don't paint anything. But I mean, that's the legacy.
Yes. And when we talk to people about that, we just have them get really focused on what, you know, get intentional about it. What is it that you want to leave behind? What do you want your kids and your grandkids saying about you? What about the people you touch every day? You know, what stories will they tell when you're not here anymore? And that's what we ask people to really get clear on. Because sometimes we're not real clear on that. We just go day to day and live life and, you know, stuff happens and you don't really know. So we ask them to get conscious about it.
Exactly. You know, and your legacy is always on your headstone, too, in some manner.
Yeah, they say.
You know, and Tom Legering, who is one of our show hosts, and he has a show with his partner, Dr. Terry Munther, and the show is Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours. And when he does his exercises with people with regarding to write their business plan, their life plan, whatever the case might be, one of the first steps in the process is write your epitaph. And it can become very profound for a lot of people. Write your own epitaph. Write,
yes.
Write what's going to be on your headstone. Other than, see, I told you I was sick. let's talk a little bit about people that are looking to make a career change,
mm-hmm.
maybe forced to make a career change, maybe just got their can full of where they're working right now, and they want to affect something completely different, but they don't
mm-hmm.
have. They don't have the courage, the gumption, maybe even they don't feel they have the correct knowledge to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. How do you work them through this process?
Well, we have a process that we go through where people get very clear. I've actually written a workbook called Career Kickstart, and it's designed that you could use it on your own, but you probably won't because it is one of those things where when you're trying to affect a career change and you're trying to really not just move the same job from company A to company B, but you're really trying to do a career change, that you need to, again, get very clear about what it is that you expect to get from that job. So there's a couple of steps that we go through. We have them look at what are the things that they really want to get from that job, everything from what kind of company culture do you thrive in, what kind of boss do you work best for, the coworkers. And sometimes it's, do you want to work on your own or do you not want to work on your own? And these days, even if you're in some kind of a corporate role, which is my background, you could end up working from home in a corporate role. So is that something that is really good for you, or will you get lonely and feel disconnected? And, you know, some people love it, some people hate it, and some people are somewhere in between. So we ask them all kinds of questions in this workbook that they sit and they reflect on. And many people will say, I had never really thought about that before. And after they get clear on what they're trying to get from that job, it goes through the normal things like what salary do you need and benefits and things like that so that you think it out before you get into the search. And then we ask them, what are you bringing? And that's where you get into the education. And, you know, in our coaching school, they called it the gremlin, the little guy that sits on your shoulder and says, you're not good enough, you don't have the right degree, what makes you think you can do this thing? We ask them to get very clear on what it is that they bring to it, from everything from a knowledge and a perspective and a education, and then your personality type. Joe and I are very different in our personality types, so the kind of work that he likes to do and the kind of work that I like to do for our careers is very, very different. He can't imagine himself, I guess, in my world.
No.
Not at all. And I can't imagine myself in healthcare. So, but together we coach. So we get them clear on those two things. What are they looking for? What are they bringing? And then we start going through a process of, so now what are you going to do with that? And what are the kinds of things that get you excited about work? What kinds of things do you do that are so great that you don't even feel like you're working? When does that happen? And the process that we use is actually based on an organizational process called appreciative inquiry, where you think about, it's a process used to move organizations forward, and we've used it now in a how do you move people forward, individuals forward. And it's a process that goes through kind of an opening up to what are all the good things that have happened in your life and why were they so great. So if you think about a mountaintop experience that you've had, something where time stood still and you just, whoa, my gosh, I can't believe this is so great, it's fantastic. We ask them to, again, get clear on what made it that way, and then ask them to bring it forward into the present and the future of, so how can we create more of that feeling in your life, and how do you translate that into work and career? And what I haven't quite figured out a way to do yet is calculate what all the possible jobs are in the world that would match up to what you want to do. But we ask the person to do that kind of research. And then I'm getting real good at what kind of websites are out there for job hunters and what kind of resources are out there for job hunters, and we point them at that. I've got a way of writing resumes that makes them pop and makes them stand out. They say you've got 7 seconds with a recruiter's eye to catch it or not. And part of that is using the language that's in the job posting and using the language of the company if you're going to go out and interview. Not using your own language, but really matching up to what they're looking for. And I do believe that you can find a job when you're over 50. I'm actually evidence of that. I do have a day job with one of the big banks in downtown Phoenix. And I got that job after we moved here, and I decided to leave the company I'd been with for almost 13 years, and I went and interviewed and beat out quite a few people internally and externally that came in for it. And I do look my age. I have white hair, and I do look like I'm 56 years old. And I got that job when I was 54, and I was told that it was the energy that I brought to the interviews and the ways that people felt good after they talked to me. And that was the coach training, as well as really managing my own managing my own outlook on that, managing my own energy. And I think that's sometimes where we lose it as boomers. We think we're too old. We think we can't do it. And we put that out there without knowing that we're putting it out there. So we try to get people very focused on, I keep saying the words get clear, but that's really what it is. It's like get intentional about how you want to show up out there and then go do it. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, the right thing will come along. And having that faith that the right thing will come along is a good way to get through it as well.
What you just said with regard to boomers and how you present yourself and how you put yourself out there is a thread that has run through many conversations I've had with many different coaches that are working with the boomer cohort, and saying things like, exactly what you did, the fact that it's really up to you. If you walk in with your tail between your legs, you won't get hired.
Absolutely.
You know, if you walk in and you explain to them how you're going to benefit them because of your age and your experience, you have a better chance of getting hired than just sitting there with twiddling your thumbs and trying to add, yes sir, well okay sir. I mean, there has to be a certain amount of positive energy that you put forward so they can say, well, this really isn't a tired old man, or this really isn't or this really isn't a tired old woman. And once you have figured out how to do that, whether it be with coaching or otherwise, you have a much better chance of finding a new job. That's if you're looking for a new job.
Yeah.
60 is the new 40, right?
Well, I may believe that, and certainly the press tries to push that at some point, but unfortunately it's not always a 35-year-old hiring hiring agent believes that. So, you know, I still think that many of them are of the opinion that they'll get rid of the 55-year-old and hire two 25s instead for the same money. And
you know, I was looking for a company that really valued the wisdom and the experience that I brought, but I also didn't want to come off that I was a threat to a younger boss, because I've been a younger boss, and I've been the older person working for the younger boss, and sometimes it's about them and their fear that you're going to, I don't know, take over, not listen, whatever it is. So for me, I tried to forge that strong peer, but understanding that the boss is the boss, I'm here to help you kind of thing, from the first conversation I began to have with her. My boss is about 10, 12 years younger than I am, and I frequently had bosses that are about that age gap. And that's okay with me. I don't mind that they are younger. They're bringing what they're bringing. And I've had some really great younger bosses that I've worked for that we allowed each other to be who we were. And I think that's a big part of getting along.
Yeah, I think it's a case where you have to convey to them, and maybe not in those direct words, but maybe you do have to use the direct words. My job here is to get done what needs to be done and to make you look good doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about somebody that is, as I mentioned earlier, they've got their can full of where they are. They don't want to work for anybody anymore. They want to take their skills out into the marketplace and start their own thing, but they just don't have the impetus on their own to make that leap. You know, it's that old leap and the net will appear. They're not gonna take the leap. How do you help those folks?
Okay. I would say that I would ask them to really, again, here's those words, focus and get clear on, is this really what you want and why do you want to do that? Because if they're really afraid of it, and we all get afraid, there's those moments of truth that come in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day or in the middle of some workshop that we're on with other coaches, and they all seem to be more advanced and they're all doing something different with technology, and you wonder if you can keep up. It's really common to get derailed along the way. But before somebody left the day job and tried to make the leap, I would ask them to really understand why they want to do that and what's the drive. I know for us, for me, it's a burning passion. For me, it's something I can't ignore. And I do the two things. I work the day job and I do the coaching nights and weekends, and Joe does the coaching full time. And so it's really understanding what's driving you to make that. If you're just trying to get away from a boss, that's probably not a good enough reason to go into. It won't sustain you. It's just, you know, if you're angry.
Yeah, it really does hinge on the passion and the drive to do whatever it is that you're aiming to do. Personally, I mean, it was being like Laurie said before, we're both second marriages, and it was that experience of let's just say that it was not an ideal marriage. Many mistakes were made, and when you finally hit upon the ideal marriage and you see how good it can be, and you've been through and you've seen how bad it can be, then that becomes the passion and the impetus that I would like other people to experience this. This is such a wonderful thing that I didn't really think was possible in my old marriage. And to have it I want to spread it. Mm-hmm. I want other people to know it. I want other people. This will do good for the world. It becomes a passion. Mm-hmm. Is my point.
And a calling.
And a calling. Yeah, yeah.
And I would say that if somebody doesn't have that to sustain them for those dark hours in the middle of the night or those what am I doing here moments that everybody has when they, at least all my friends have had them. I'm not sure that everybody has them, but most people do, where they wonder, should I go back and get a job? Should I really be doing this? You need that drive and you need that calling and you need that fire in the belly kind of thing from one way or another. For Joe and I, it is let's go change the world to keep it sustained, to keep it moving.
Yeah, and I truly believe that deep down in everyone, there is that spark of something, whatever it is for that person. But that exists in every single person. It's just a matter of getting real with yourself and finding what it is.
And deciding whether you want to make a living out of that or if it's just a nice hobby. Nice hobby, a good volunteer work, a way to be a philanthropist. You know, there's many ways to address one's passion,
yes,
I would
say,
rather than starting your own business, because starting your own business is tough. It's a marathon, and you just got to keep moving through it.
Yes, it is. Well, we're gonna take a little break here. We've got a few commercial messages to run, and then when we get back, Joe, I'd like you to address the cynic that says there's no such thing as a perfect marriage, and I won't ever find it. So let's address that when we come back right after these messages.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Naraki, author of the forthcoming book, The 10 Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours.
Hey folks, John Bloom here. When I'm not broadcasting for the Cardinals or Suns, I've been spending the last couple of years with my friends building the fastest growing online golf community in the great state of Arizona. Before you book your next round of golf here, go see what golfers just like you are saying about the courses you want to play at golfmix.com. You'll get the most authentic feedback from golfers giving you information you need before you spend the money you've earned. While you're there, write a review of the last course you played and get $10 off your next purchase at Vans Golf Shops. And enter into the Greenskeeper of the Year contest for a chance to win a foursome at the home of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the stadium course at TPC Scottsdale. Please join us for the next Golf Mixer, Saturday, October 6th at the Raven Golf Club at Verado, and play a hole with PGA Tour winner Aaron Oberholzer and World Long Drive champion Brian Pavlett. You can find details on golf mixers, tournaments, charity events, junior golf, and more on our statewide golf events calendar. Just check out Golf Mix, Arizona's leading golf course review site and mobile app. What are you waiting for?
Get in the mix!
At golfmix.com.
The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the food bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View Thrift Store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, I want to help. Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we're back on Friday, September 21st, 2012, and we're discussing with Lori and Joseph Battaglia their coaching exploits with Living the Dream Coaches. And prior to going to break, I posed a question to Mr. Joseph Battaglia, which was basically, what do you tell the cynic that says there's no such thing as a perfect marriage?
Well, I think the answer to that is open up your eyes and look. I mean, if you're standing in this room, you would look at us too, and you would know that that's not true. We have formed,
yeah,
in my opinion, as close as a true marriage as you can get. It really is a matter of commitment. Are you committed to the relationship? And beyond that, then it's a matter of intimacy. And if you're committed to that person and you're not afraid to bear your soul to that other person, it is possible. But I think it takes maturity. And it takes maturity on both partners and commitment, and it certainly can be done.
I remember years ago I would see Reader's Digest from time to time when this is when I was quite young. It would come into the house, and there was always, every now and then, there was an article in there, can this marriage be saved? And they came across with all kinds of ideas about yes or no or whatever. How often do you find in your practice marriages that just, you can see that just aren't going to work, and you say, hey, see if you can at least get out of it amicably, rather than causing a war. But I mean, how frequently does that happen? That you say, "Well, the best thing for you to do is to separate."
Well, you know, I don't know that I would ever make that bold a statement to someone. But yes, you're right. I absolutely see it quite often. It starts in the beginning. The people, they go into the marriage with masks on, you know, they're projecting something that they think the other person wants to see. And really, then when the marriage takes hold, you know, the marriage becomes solidified, and then they have to take the mask off, because you can't keep that mask on your whole life. They take the mask off, then they realize, oh, they made a mistake, and that's not the person that I thought that person was. When we started this marriage, we both had marriages that were full of mind games. So when we went into this marriage, we made a conscious decision. There will be no drama. There will be no mind games. There will only be truth. It doesn't matter what it is. There will only be truth. And then everything is on the table, and that's what's missing in those other marriages that you clearly can see that they're not going to make it over the long term. They just were not mature enough to expose themselves to that other person and be, you know, and quite honestly, it's brutal honesty. It's exactly who you are. So there's honesty on both sides, and you know what's happening. In a nutshell, that's it.
And I would say that that does not happen overnight for us. We've been together 11 years.
True.
We're coming up on our 10th wedding anniversary, and you know, we both had kids and all that. Although mine was grown and his were not quite grown yet. There's a lot to work through, and what we did was we actually went to a therapist preemptively before there were problems, because I felt like we were dragging a lot of baggage with us. Joe and I were both married to high school sweethearts, so they met when they were 16, we met when we were 15, and by they, I mean Joe's former marriage and my former marriage, we met when we were 15, so you don't really know who you are then, and you have a... Both of us had long marriages over 20 years, almost 25 years, and you just don't really know who you are. And so we began to unpack that baggage together, sitting on a couch with a therapist that we said, You know, we don't have a problem with our relationship, but we're concerned with the way we've learned over the last 25, 30 years to behave with a partner, that things could happen that both of us will just shut down and go away and not deal. And she really helped us to understand how to work with each other, how to communicate. We're very different in our approaches. So Joe is the kinder, gentler one of us. And I can tend to be like a steamroller. And I didn't want that to play out, nor did I want to be the one that just said, fine, that's whatever, I'm walking away. You know, I didn't want to be that person. So we have worked at setting the foundation so that when stuff comes up, and it does, I mean, we have elderly moms and we've got grown kids and we moved across the United States away from everybody. So you need to be able to understand how to work with each other through the disagreements and the differences of opinions. We don't fight, but we certainly don't agree on everything. But we work that through in a different way than what either one of us had experienced the first time around.
Sure. If you go too deep down that road, I mean, there's always a danger of codependence,
yeah.
You know? So by allowing the other person to be who they are, then you avoid that problem. And the other person has the freedom to be who they are and be respected for who they are. And that's the basis of the healthy relationship.
Did your work and some of your realizations then also help you both or maybe one or the other of you to have a better understanding and acceptance of your former spouses?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that I have, it's interesting, I'm Facebook friends with my ex's fiance. So I'm watching the wedding preparations now on their side. It's kind of an interesting place to be.
Right.
But we have we have a friendly enough relationship, and I have a respect for what he brought to the relationship. And I think a lot of the things are just that we were very, very young, and really I've seen marriages when you get together in your teens that last forever, and I admire people that can make it go. For me, I shifted and became somebody – no, I was going to say I became somebody different. Not really. She was there all along, but at 15 and raised in the 1970s and things, I grew up with the ideas that you stuck it out forever and, you know, you never got divorced and you put up or shut up and those kinds of things. So you bring all that with you. And I think that just being single for a few years before I met Joe helped me to understand myself better, to understand my ex better. I'm not sorry I had that marriage, and I certainly got a great son out of it and some great granddaughters. But I know now that I wouldn't let things go that bad for that long. And it was a marriage that had its great parts and its not so great parts. And you grow apart after a while. You want different things in life. And I certainly would not be here in this state doing what I'm doing if I had stayed in that relationship. It's been 15 years, and I'm, you know, really a much happier person with myself and the choices I've been able to make. And I can't really blame them on anybody else, because this husband certainly doesn't hold me back from anything I want to do. So if I don't like something, it's pretty much up to me to change it.
Yeah, right. Well, we've been pretty fortunate also. I mean, I've got an ex-wife, and she's remarried, and she lives here in Arizona. She lives in Tempe, and mm-hmm. And my daughter and her family, husband and two daughters, are here. They were formerly in San Diego, and then the youngest one was born here. And it was interesting because my ex-wife and I got along relatively well. I mean, we weren't at each other's throats. I mean, it was all said and done and finalized, and we didn't say anything to each other, but that constituted getting along. Because when we were getting along, we were saying a lot of things to one another, and it wasn't always nice. But when our daughter moved here, she moved in and she said, well, here's what we're going to do. And I and I'm sitting there going, oh, here comes an edict from my daughter. And she says, I'm tired. Don and I are tired of traveling around from house to house for Thanksgiving and Christmas. We're going to do Thanksgiving and Christmas at our house, and everybody's invited. Bring a dish to pass, and we're going to get along. And if you don't get along, don't. And if you don't get along, don't come. And it was like, wow. That's pretty interesting. So, and
we raised a healthy daughter.
Pardon me.
You raised a healthy daughter there. That's good.
Yes, we did. And then when you added in the fact that I had had this tremendous hatred for her husband, and Deborah was less than enamored with the whole situation herself, it started with the wedding, when we split all the wedding costs right down the middle, and everybody had a grand time, and it was the four of us giving our daughter and stepdaughter away. That was very nice, and that started the process, and then my daughter made her edict. And now we're over there for Easter, and we're over there for Christmas, and we're over there for Thanksgiving, and we're joking and having a good time. And I can sit at the table with Deborah and Steve there, and my ex-wife and I can recount things that we did together that were funny and whatever else. And nobody seems to be affected by it one way or another. And matter of fact, Deborah and my ex-wife, although not famous friends, they don't go to coffee together, but I mean they certainly seem to enjoy each other's company and respect one another. So that's good. It's all very healthy, and it can be done. Yeah, because I didn't think it could be done with my group.
It can be done, and I think more people might want to give it a try. Now there are relationships that are not great, and you know, I don't know. Do you want to say anything about what would you tell people that just can't get along with their ex?
I think the most valuable piece of information that I could tell people is that when you have that sort of situation where you don't really get along with that other person, you have to realize that when you have that sort of situation, whatever reaction you're getting from that other person, it has nothing to do with you. It's all about them. It's their reaction to whatever's going on. It doesn't have anything to do with you. So, I mean, that may be a difficult concept for our audience to get across, but if you stop and think about it, I mean, it is true. If a person harbors ill will towards you, that really is it's their feelings that are involved there. It doesn't really have anything to do with you. So if you look at it from that direction, you can see that, you know, you have to stand aside of it and understand that what they're going through is their problem and something they're going to have to handle. It doesn't have anything to do with you. So it deflates the emotion, at least on your side, of the situation and makes it much easier to handle.
Well, yeah, I can see that if you just sit there and say, hey, that's your problem, not mine. I'm over it.
It's not an accusation, but it's more of a compassion to understand that this person is going through this problem. You know, it's not like, oh, forget it, go away, I don't want to hear about it. You know, it's like it's more you have to look at it as from a compassion point of view. That person is going through pain over this thing. But really, it is their job, and you can help them with it if you are so inclined. But they need to get a different perspective on what the situation is for them to handle it. Otherwise, they're going to have pain for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I look at when someone harbors ill will towards me. I mean, I look at it from a compassionate point of view. That wow, this is really difficult for them. You know, that going through this. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It is them.
Well, is it safe to surmise that it's that way in life, period? I mean, if you
it,
if you bump up against a client that's that way, if you bump up against a boss that's that way, or if you bump up against a partner that's that way, chances are very good that that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean that in a way. I mean, you've got to, you know, again, you got to look at it from, you know, from, I'm going to say, up above, looking at the situation. I mean, if I am deliberately doing something bad to another person, now that's my problem. But if someone just, if you're not just getting along with someone for no real good reason, then really the source of that emotion is coming from them. And it's something maybe they don't like the way you look. You look exactly like somebody who's done something nasty to them, you know, previous to that. So they're going to drag that with them, or you said something to them that you know someone else had said to them that brought up all this other emotion. Doesn't have anything to do with you. It's all about them. You have a drill.
At what point do you suggest to somebody, you know, that's going to go nowhere if you continue to do that, if you continue to involve? What you need to do is just get away from it, get that toxic sentiment out of your life, and just ignore them, frankly, because they're never going to change. They want to wallow in their discomfort, and there's nothing that you can do about it. So you just need to get that toxicity and clean it out. At what point do you say that?
Well, it's in two situations. If you have to deal with that, if you have to deal with that person on an ongoing situation, then my question would be, then you get close. You know, you say, why are you feeling like that? What did I? What about what I'm doing is causing you to have that reaction? If there's no skin in the game, so to speak, and it's just somebody, you know, that it's occasional or whoever, you have to cut your, you just walk away from it. Don't engage. Step aside. But if it's something that you care about, someone you care about, then you get closer. You get closer to that person and find out why. And pretty soon, if they're honest, it's going to come out and it will be resolved.
And I think, too, from a coaching perspective, rather than advising someone to go, now if somebody were in danger or it was really, really, really toxic, or they had issues they couldn't work out, that needed to be really handled by a professional therapist,
right,
we'd refer.
Absolutely.
But the other thing is, as a coach, we would probably ask them a question like, well, Pete, assuming that so-and-so isn't going to change, what are some things you might do to deal with that? And you start thinking about, well, what could I do? Well, I could yell back at them, okay, what would the result be of that? Well, that wouldn't go well. Until you get around to the I could walk away. Okay, what's keeping you from walking away? And you just kind of take people through the questioning process so that they get around to what can you do? Because what we've learned is, and with us both staying in marriages for a long time that we knew weren't the best for us, people get ready to go in their own due time, or they don't, or they stay forever, and, you know, they just kind of sink into it. And everybody's got to come to that decision in their own way, in their own due time. We've even had friends that know darn well that down the road, we had a friend that got married that knew she was going to end up divorced at the point she got married.
Right.
And she did. And it still took her 5 or 6 years, I think, probably, to get herself out of that situation. When you or I, looking at her on paper, would say, oh, my gosh gracious, what are you thinking? And she said, yeah, I know, but I'm going to do it. And, yeah, I know, probably it won't last. And, yeah, I know. And then it didn't. And she's better off, I guess, with the lessons learned out the other side. So who knows?
I,
not local.
I can change it.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. I think it's the, well, maybe I can help them.
I know I can change it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, give me a couple of your success stories.
Okay, well, let's see. So one of our success stories, we worked with somebody on the East Coast. We do these things called VIP days where you, the client, decide what success look like at the end of that day, and we give you 6 hours of our time plus lunch and it's all about you. And so we had a client take us up on that. She was in a really toxic work situation that she was really being abused. It was like watching somebody in an abusive marriage. And she was a very powerful woman. And when she came to us, she was totally in victim mode of, I don't know what to do about this. I have this personal relationship with, you know, friendship, long-time friendship with the president, but my boss is evil. And then I did this, and it was awful. And so we worked with her in a VIP day to get her energy different, and she was afraid she was going to get fired, yet she had another job lined up. And so it was all said and done. She ended up signing on as a coaching client afterwards, and people that were around her that knew, because we never tell anybody who we're coaching with, so because of confidentiality and all that, but a mutual friend, she told one of our friends, I'm coaching with Joe and Laurie. And our friend said, wow, what a shift in her energy. I have not seen anything like that in a long time. And she was able to really get more clear on that. She kind of reclaimed her power.
Yep. She stepped into herself, realizing exactly who she was.
She did.
And complete success. Just turned it around entirely.
There were some panicked calls. And the one panicked call was, I think they're going to fire me. And we said, good, then you can move out of this situation, because she was waiting to give notice. And so it was all said and done. They had a conversation where they decided to mutually part ways. She went on to her new job. She's highly successful, and life goes on for her. So, you know, we feel good about that, that she was able to really claim that. But really, she had to do a lot of the hard work. She had to do the heavy lifting, and we stood by and gave her the support system and the framework to do that.
Well, that sounds something that she really had a lot of stuff that was going on there that you managed to help her get through that.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, you you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You're so wrapped up in your own emotions that you can't see the direction that you need to go, and all you need all you need is a good coach to just to park the screen, to show you exactly what's going on here. You know, and once you see it, it's, now I see it, and off you go.
Yeah. Deborah and I say you can't read the label when you're inside the jar.
That's a good one.
Very good. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, I see by the clock on the wall, we're down to the short rows, as they say in the farmland. So why don't we take this opportunity for you folks to give us your shameless self-promotion. Tell us about how to get hold of you, your coaching, your websites, your seminars, whatever it is that you do. Now's your time in the sun.
Okay. So you can find us online at www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. You can also find us on Facebook under Living the Dream Coaches. You can find both Joe and I, Laurie Battaglia, L-A-U-R-I-E, and Joseph P. Battaglia. You can find us on LinkedIn. And we'll be on Twitter one of these days. And then the phone number is 888-505-5762. And one of the things we'd encourage our listeners to do is talk to us about something that we call the R Factor Assessment. We are certified in this Energy Leadership Index Assessment that we've branded as the R Factor. Are you ready to reinvent? Are you ready to redo, to do a do-over? And it assesses your levels of energy. How much time and energy do you put into the thoughts process of being a victim or being angry in conflict? Versus being in more positive levels of energy. There's five of them that are positive and two of them that are negative. But, boy, do those negative ones drag you down. It's like having a brake on your life, an emergency brake on when you're trying to hit the freeway. And we would like to recommend that assessment. We run those for $129. People find them life-changing. So if you go to our website, you can contact us through there. You can contact us again at 888-505-5762 or livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Well, thank you very much, folks. I appreciate you taking the time to be with me this morning on Arizona Boomer Radio, and all good information and all helpful information, I'm sure, for many, many people that that you've been involved with. So continued good work to you, and congratulations on your success. I'll be contacting you here shortly after this show so we can talk about a couple of other things that you might be interested in off air. But beyond that, thanks again for being our guest. We certainly do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Take care now.
You too.
You too.
And that's Lori and Joseph Battaglia from LivingTheDreamCoaches.com, LivingTheDreamCoaches.com. They can help you with any number of things that you might be having a rough patch or have stumped on something. Give them a call and see if there's something that, they may be able to do for you and make your life turn out a little easier and a little more enjoyable if you're having some kind of dilemma. Give them a shout, give them a call, and we'll hopefully listen to us again next week. We've got some other great guests coming up, so stay tuned on Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I know we got some great guests there, and some others are filling in for the later part of the week. So enjoy your weekend, everybody. Have a great Arizona weekend. Take care, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye now.
You've been listening to Arizona Boomer Radio with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.